Matthew's Gospel, which we've been hearing throughout this past liturgical year, contains a lot of hard teachings. Much is said about the dangers of worldliness and wealth. We hear, too, of the expectation that we perform good works. And, of course, a number of parables tell of the impending final judgment. Many people are said to dislike Matthew's Gospel because of all the demands it lays before us. But it's not just a book about high standards. Matthew's primary goal was to convince his fellow Jews that Jesus is the Messiah. And so one of the most prevalent themes treated in this Gospel is the kingship of Jesus. A subject that, fittingly enough, is touched upon by all our readings today as we celebrate the solemnity of Christ the King. Before returning to the Gospel, I'd like to speak briefly on today's second reading. As we heard a few moments ago, St. Paul writes about Christ's kingdom and how it will eventually be handed over to God the Father. Before that takes place, however, something has to happen first. What has to happen is all of Jesus' enemies have to be destroyed. This letter was written nearly 2,000 years ago. Yet it probably goes without saying that Christ's enemies are very much alive and active, and thus his kingdom continues to be in a state of war. One of the priest professors at the seminary made a comment to my class several weeks back about the existence of evil in our world and how to help the typical Christian make sense of all the senselessness that surrounds us. His take is that the world is very much a spiritual war zone, and that few people seem to realize it. That we fail to acknowledge we are in a spiritual battle, and consequently, most of humanity doesn't know how to deal with it. I think my professor is exactly right. Among vast sections of the population, there seems to be no real concern about the moral issues that plague our culture. People are easily fired up about politics, the environment, civil and human rights, which is all well and good, but among too many, the notion of sin has been lost. Especially when we can't identify a clear victim who suffers as a result of human behavior. The criteria employed by a lot of people in determining right or wrong seems to be, it's not evil if I'm not hurting anyone. As a result, many forms of sin have been distorted into a belief that, as free Americans, we have a right to live as we want to live, so long as we are not violating the rights or liberty of another. What too many people fail to understand is that behavior which violates God's will is an abuse of freedom, which, rather than liberating the individual, usually ends up enslaving them to sin. Make no mistake, the devil is exceedingly intelligent and exceedingly cunning, and has clouded countless minds in order to ensnare them to turn against God through sin. As a result, as evidenced by the mores in our culture, we seem to be taking a beating in the spiritual realm. A big part of this problem, as my professor said, and I completely agree, is that we have failed to challenge the enemy. We have failed to employ the spiritual weapons at our disposal. Weapons such as prayer and fasting and other forms of mortification or sacrifice, such as we might practice during Lent. It is understandable that upon seeing so much tragedy and deprivation, we may feel powerless. But the truth is, as Catholics, we are far from it. And in fact, we each have an important part to play. Along with prayer and mortification, which can merit grace for ourselves and for others, our acts of charity form another key component in the spiritual battle, because through charity, we spread God's love through our fallen world. In last weekend's Gospel from Matthew, we heard the parable about the talents and the clear expectation that we make good use with what has been given to us rather than simply burying it in the ground. Today, I would simply highlight Jesus' words from the gospel we heard a few moments ago: "Whatever you did for the least brothers of mine, you did for me." As author Peter Kreeft notes, if 1,000 Christians really believed those words of Jesus and lived accordingly, the next century would be shaped by 1,000 saints. As we wind down the season of ordinary time with this great solemnity and look ahead to the season of Advent that begins next weekend, perhaps we might consider the part we can play in Jesus' kingdom here on earth. And as we worship and receive our Eucharistic Lord in just a few moments, maybe we could ask for his wisdom in knowing how to best direct our efforts.